baby. Baby, I eat this shit from right out. It's dedicated to all the pretty girls. All the pretty girls in the world. And the ugly girls too. But to me, you're pretty anyway, baby. You give me your number, I call you up. You act like your pussy on interrupt. I don't have no trouble with you fucking me, but I have a little problem with you not fucking me. Baby, you know I'ma take care of you, cause you said you got my baby and I know it ain't true. Is it a good thing? No, it's bad, bitch. For good or worse, makes you switch. So I walk on over with my crystal. Bitches, niggas, put away your pistol. Dirty won't be having it in this house, cause bitch, I'll cripple your style. Now that you heard my charming voice, you couldn't get another nigga. The coochie won't get moist. If you wanna look good and not be bummy, yo, you better give me that money.
Ooh. Hey, dirty, baby, I got your money, don't you worry. I said, hey, baby, I got your money.
I whispered in the air, you wanna be with me? You wanna look pretty though in my video? Oh, dirty on the hat, and I let you all know. Just dance if you caught up in the Holy Ghost trance. If you stop, I'ma put them killer ants in your pants. I'm the ODB, as you can see. FBI, don't you be watching me. I don't want no problems, cause I put you down in the ground where you cannot be found. I'm just third dog trying to make somebody. So give me my streaks and give me my honey. Radios play this all day, every day. Recognize I'm a fool and you love me. None of you know, better look at me funny. No, you know my name down, give me my money.
Hey, dirty,
sing it.
Baby, I got your money.
Sing it, girls.
I said, hey,
just sing it right now.
Baby, I got your money.
If 31 is hey, money, I think y'all should give him his money.
Baby, I got your money.
That's how I like you, girl.
Like this all night. Bitches, put your ass out, let me hold it tight. You're looking at my wrist saying, this so nice. The price, bitch, is diamond shining disco line. You better help me solve my problem. I'ma get this money and rob them. Lucky dog when I won the lotto. Ran up on my car, I'm carrying Rollo. But hold on, you can call me dirty and then lift up your skirt. And you want some of this dirty. God made dirt and dirt bust your ass. Nah, stop annoying me, yeah, play my music loud. And take the bats and old dirty to move the crowd. And say he had his dick in his mouth. Eddie Murphy taught me that back of the
house. But give him the money.
Hey, dirty, baby, I got your money. Don't you worry. I said, hey, baby, I got your money. Hey, dirty.
You're listening to Ink Studs on CITR 101.9. That was an old moldy but an oldie, a goodie, oldie but a goodie, a moldy oldie. I love it. Old Dirty Bastard, once known as Little Baby Jesus and Old Dirt McGirt. Is that all the names?
I think there's more.
There's more.
But I don't know offhand.
Those three for sure. My guest today is Jason T. Miles. I want to kind of describe, you're not just a cartoonist. I mean, you're a cartoonist. You do some writing on comics as well.
And a little bit, yeah.
Starting to do more.
I hope.
Hopefully.
I hope. It's a matter of time.
Are you officially part of the Comics crew now?
I don't know. I guess. I know that the three main guys asked three other guys to participate, And so I've, you know, I wrote a short, a brief piece about the first comic I really remember reading, and I have a couple other things in the works, but I'm hoping to finish a piece on Steve Ditko here pretty soon.
Always a good topic.
Yeah, he's one of my favorites.
He's there's always a different point of view on him, which I find interesting. There's no definitive.
Yeah, I have something to say that I haven't read about or heard elsewhere, so I hope to be able to add rather than to detract from the already, like, the glut of Ditko information out there.
It is one thing I find fascinating about Ditko is that folks that are involved in studying Ditko and stuff, they all have completely different views and hold them in different regards.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, as we see more writing coming out, it'll be fascinating to see how things kind of clash and contrast. And
definitely, I love it. I love with Ditko as not just a cartoonist, but just an artist. You know, he's his work is so fascinating, and the stories about him definitely add to the mystique. But you know, his work alone offers a lot of different point of views, mm-hmm. and a lot of things to look at, and he really. I find it interesting that, you know, comics being an interdisciplinary art form, a lot of times when I read about them or even consider them myself, they seem very singular, you know, with the drawing or the writing or the characters or, you know, the what have you. But with him, it seems like he really, he's almost a cipher at this point, and you can find all sorts of, I mean, the word, there's such a depth to it. I mean, he might be drawing Speedball.
or Chuck Norris.
Yeah, exactly. And he might be doing Mr. A or some anonymous Charlton comic. And it's just, you know, he's just really open for, I think, for, he's a wonderful touchstone for comics and for the aesthetic and the business as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's something fascinating about how it's almost like the study of him, because you're kind of, it's kind of like studying like an ancient artifact in a way, because you're left with these remains. I mean, the guy's still alive, but you're left with these remains and these little pieces that you put together of the rare comments, public comments that he's made,
right,
beyond his diatribes.
Mm-hmm.
And you're kind of piecing together this identity that may be completely off. In
right.
some ways.
Right. Well, yeah, and hearing all the stories about his involvement with fandom, and I mean, that's what his current work is actually, a lot of it is his reaction to some perceived fandom that still does or does not exist.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fascinating and a little disconcerting that it's still a hot-button issue for him. But when I was in San Diego this last year, I was walking by a table, and there's this art dealer, and he had a whole notebook full of postcards and ephemera from cartoonists, and he had a couple postcards from Ditko to various people, and it was they were really fascinating because they were just these blank cards, and on one side he had drawn a character like the Blue Beetle, and then on the other side he would say something like, "Thank you for your letter. I don't have time to answer your questions. Good day." But he would, you know, have time to draw the Blue Beetle.
Yeah.
And they were just fantastic, but it was really, really fascinating. So
I almost don't think it's a matter of the time to answer the question, or maybe the willingness to answer the question.
Sure. Well, he's almost like a Peter Parker or Spider-Man. I mean, he's got this, it's almost like he has this other identity that he's trying to conceal from everybody. He's a fascinating guy.
He probably, you know, goes home and watches football and eats Cheetos. And
yeah.
Meanwhile, everyone's thinking that he's in some kind of political conspiracy or something. I don't
right.
know.
Right. Yeah, studying Rand.
It's like, nah, I just wanted to watch the Jets.
Right.
So, Ditko aside, maybe I'll let people know some of your work that you do have.
Okay.
Dead Ringer, was that the name? I'm trying to remember.
That's yep.
Your massive book from Zach Sally's La Mano Press, or is it La Mano 21?
I don't know.
The website is La Mano 21.
Right. Yeah, I know. I think it's both.
Okay. We'll say it's La Mano because that's what the book says.
It's good branding, nonetheless.
It is. Confusing always works. Thick Mutt. But that's, is that the actual name of that?
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really. Yeah. Yeah.
Pines 1 and 2, What Paint, and Medicine Show. And was it Medicine Show that was in Abstract Comics?
No, I wish it had been, but no, it was another booklet called Mainstream Blackout.
Okay.
And I just finished a new mini comic zine called Yoko Ono and My Favorite Beetle. So that just came out, or is coming out.
Was she your favorite Beetle?
I don't have a favorite, but that's the name of the story, and yeah, it was too good of a title.
Now, you're involved in all these. Like, you work for Fantagraphics. Do you kind of want to let people know what your role is there?
Well, maybe they could let me know. I do a lot of different things for Fantagraphics. I've been working there for about 7 years, and I've done a lot of different things. My official title is sales director, which sounds pretty good, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm not really a salesman in a traditional sense. I would be screwed if I was trying to sell like shower curtains. I'd be out of a job. So, but yeah, I deal with distribution of Fantagraphics and Eros titles, and
do they still sell the Eros?
Eros, yeah, we still do it. It's much less than it has been over the years. But we do more graphic novels than pamphlets. But the internet is something that's kind of taken a bite out of that. But yeah, so I just kind of deal with that. Try to make sure everybody has books, and I work with retailers for events as well as any problems they may have getting books. I do ads for distributors. Sometimes that involves layout, and I also do some editing. I was the assistant editor on the Humbug collection from last year, and I co-edited Like a Dog by Zach Sally with Eric Reynolds, and currently I'm working on a couple of new things as well. Trying to just get some stuff going, I'm working on some a couple of my own publications that I'm editing and putting together to self-publish.
Mm-hmm.
So that stuff's a lot of fun. I wish I could, I wish there was more able to do more of that. But I think everybody in the industry does.
Yep. The more time you have for personal work.
Well, that as well as just the editing, like the making of books is so much fun, and the problems and everything that goes into it is really exciting, and working with the designers and the artists and the whole thing, watching it happen, is something I've always liked doing since I was a little kid, and making my own little booklets and, taking them to school or wherever, and it's just, business is, you got to make sure that everything's running, everything can support the production of a book, so I spend more time doing that than actual, the sales. Other, but it's something that I try to make time for.
Well, let's start out. So you've got that kind of angle of your work, but your personal work is anything but traditional.
Right.
Maybe it is more traditional comics.
Yeah, I don't know. It once was, and I feel like it's becoming more traditional, becoming more some of the more recent things I've done. I've been doing some stuff for this fantastic newspaper called Smoke Signal.
Mm-hmm, the one out of the desert island.
Yeah, I love there's a bunch of these comics newspapers coming out, and I think they're great. I miss the paper rodeo. I wasn't a part of that as much as I would have liked to have been. And so the opportunity Smoke Signal came, and I jumped on it, and I'm hoping to maybe even try to submit some stuff to some of the other papers that are coming out. I think they're really wonderful. There's Diamond Comics.
Yeah, yeah. Out of Floating World.
Yeah, and there was somebody sent me a link to another one that looked great, and
I know Luke Ramsey does one.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know that, yeah.
At least I think it's his. Like, it was all, I picked one up at a local comic store. It was him and Ron Rigi
Oh, wow.
And a bunch of other folks that had done residencies at his
Right, Iron
project.
Fold, yeah. I love all that stuff. So a lot of that's been, you know, I'm getting more interested in, I guess, traditional story, linear, maybe a little more linear storytelling. I was doing work like that. Several years ago, I did a mini comic about I think 45-page mini comic called Airdrome, and that was very linear. And I did some other stuff, but I reached a point where I couldn't do that work anymore. It was too, I don't know, there's something about that kind of work, like doing a comic where it's characters and you're following them. I love all that stuff. You know, I grew up on Love and Rockets and Frank by Jim Woodring, and I enjoy reading that stuff tremendously. I love Tintin. You know, all those things where you're with the characters, character-driven. And But I kind of, you know, a lot of that stuff, you kind of have to be this, like, retarded god. You know, you have to, you know, it's like you have this neighborhood that you're sort of looming over, and you need to have kind of, I think it helps to have a vision or a sensibility. And I don't know, I reached a point in my personal life where my sensibilities or things that I knew, the things that I understood about life were just, you know, kind of bullshit, and that I wasn't helping anyone or myself, so I kind of I needed sort of an abrupt change. And I started to think a lot about comics and art, and how a lot of, in comics in particular, I feel like a lot of the greats, they report what they know, and they offer all sorts of wisdom. And I think that's, you know, in some ways, that's the job of the cartoonist in a traditional way. You know, if you look at it, cartoonist is sort of the guy in the corner, the person on the corner, just like kind of shouting, like, you know, the sky is falling. And I mean, I think that's a good role. But for me at the time, I couldn't do that anymore. I realized that what I knew was just killing me and hurting other people. And so I stopped. I was like, I don't know anything, and I don't want to, you know, I don't have a, I don't have things that I necessarily want to impart. And so, you know, like, you know, I read like some Robert Crumb. I read a Robert Crumb comic recently, and he was talking about this old refrigerator. I mean, it was a fascinating read, but it was like, you know, or about his old 78s or Harvey P. Carr, you know, talking about this stuff, or some of Dan Clowes's work comes to mind, where he's sort of talking about people he hates or people he loves. And I just, for me, comics and just making art became more about trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
I still had the desire to make stuff, but it was, you know, an attempt to try to understand the world as well as myself. And a lot of that, I should mention, I think, was inspired by interview. I think it was an interview I read with John Cassavetes, when they were asking about a film he made called Faces, and it was a film about these Hollywood producers, and why on earth would he make a movie about these guys? And he replied, well, he found himself, after his first film, he found himself really upset by these kinds of people, because they're getting in the way of him making what he wanted to make. And he, you know, was saying, I hated these people. I just wanted to kill them. I thought they were horrible. And, you know, then all of a sudden he realized, like, well, wait a second, like, my work, like, his work, as he said, was about love. And he decided to try to make a film to understand these guys, not to hate them anymore, but to understand them. And I read that at an impressionable time, and I thought, well, I'm going to do comics like that. And what's happened has happened. I don't know. I mean,
well, what are you trying to understand through your comics then?
Well, I just try to understand myself. Try to organize my experience, and I think art making is, whether we're aware of it or not, is a way that we organize our experience, however messy, however controlled. And I just became okay with making very messy stuff and sort of trying to, you know, report that.
I find it interesting, just listening to it, art and comics seem interchangeable. And for most folks involved in comics,
right,
I mean, art is what you see, but it's a lot,
sure,
of it is what people recognize. A lot is the story and stuff, too. Do you find with your works you're trying to create an artwork that utilizes comics, but it's focused on being a piece of art?
That's a good question. I've spent a fair amount of time agonizing over, you know, whether I'm a painter who draws comics or a cartoonist who paints or something. I just consider myself a cartoonist. Mm-hmm. This is what I do. This is what I'm interested by. I do find myself becoming less and less interested in just drawing. Comics are kind of... I think when I started trying to make comics, like in earnest, I think I understood how they worked better inherently. But then I got all screwed up, and I had a really hard time with this understanding of drawing versus cartooning. And, you know, so at the same time I sort of cast aside the narrative work, I also cast aside, like, any of my assumptions about comics. So I, you know, had these rules that I picked up. One of them was, don't draw realistic. Don't draw in a representational way. I picked that one up from Tom Devlin. And just before you called, I was actually looking at an EC comic, which, if Tom's listening to this, I'm sure he's rolling his eyes.
Yeah, I tried talking, defending Mobius in front of him. He did not like that.
That's right. So there were all these rules that I had sort of fallen into or used, and a lot of that was just because I read something by a cartoonist who I liked, and I thought, okay, that sounds good, you know. So I just sort of cast all that aside, and, you know, a lot of, I think, what I've been trying to do for myself, and it's fine that nobody else sees this in the work, but I've been, trying to understand drawing versus cartooning more. And I actually am really, right now, I feel really excited about cartooning more than I have in a long time, because I feel like I do feel, I feel confident, more confident now that I understand cartooning a little bit better, I think, than mm-hmm. I did a couple of years ago or 5 years ago. I feel like I don't have these nagging questions, like, well, what if I do this? So, those questions were driving me crazy, so I just started doing them, and there's a lot of searching and, trying to figure out how this stuff works, and there's a lot of things that I've printed that I don't think necessarily work, but I'm proud of them, and I stand by them. But I'm most excited right now about what I'm doing right now and what I've got on deck with my own work. I'm a lot more, there's guys like if we're to use like other cartoonists as a reference, you know, whereas I might have been at one time like really interested in, I'm trying to think of a good example.
Do you mean like a modern,
someone
kind of like contemporary?
Yeah, someone who might
like a Mark Bell.
No, not Mark. Mark's stuff. He's a cartoonist. That guy, he's great. I guess like the stuff that I'm really. I'm sorry. I'm not coming up with a really good example of what I was maybe. You know, I would okay. I would like Gary Panter for me. Okay. I think it's no doubt that like if you look at some of my stuff, it's clear that I am. You know, I've looked at a lot of Gary Panter, very influenced by him, whether I like that or not. I love his work, but I, you know, for me, influences are just, they happen. I don't have a lot of control over them yet. And, you know, so I'd look at Gary's work, or I'd look at, like, Ron Rigi's work, all that kind of stuff. I'd sort of group it in my mind, and you know, it was just sort of like basically kind of try to follow that path. And then, you know, I sort of cast that aside, and now, as I'm getting more into the idea of flow and spreads and layout and, you know, the eye and how it moves across the page, I find myself looking at, like, Carl Barks and, like, Ditko, Tezuka, a lot of manga is really, I think we're in a great time right now where more and more interesting manga is coming over, and it's totally affecting American comics or Western North American comics. And mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's the kind of, like, the more functional, I kind of think of that as a little more functional cartooning, or Jaime Hernandez, I mean, that guy, you know, he's, or Little Lulu, you know, all that stuff.
John Stanley.
Like, yeah, it's all, like, real, that's real cartoons, you know, it's about the storytelling and the pace and the cumulative effect of everything working together. Frank Santoro's been really a great presence for me to have discovered not that long ago with his work, but also some of his writing really resonates with me. And so
He's quite the preacher.
Yeah, he is. I like a lot what he has to say. Mm-hmm. You know, when he gets talking about color and he gets talking about layout and kind of rhythmic forms in comics, I think there's a lot to be learned from that. So,
I think that's something like even I find myself like I go through read comics and but I don't use that analytical eye that a cartoonist will. And it's interesting. I sit down, talk to my friends about comics, and they'll be like, you know, talking about you know how one person does one thing. You know. Mm-hmm. Like a Mobius movement or sure. something, and it's like...
I feel like I'm just getting that stuff now.
Yeah.
I mean, I...
and it's not something you're going to get right away, and it takes years of, you know, really consciously going through this work, and eventually you start popping out and just seeing, like, how that person does that one thing and how that works so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, so. I think there's a lot to what you just said there about that. I know I... For me, reading comics was much more intuitive and had been, and then I just got to the point where I had to analyze it a little bit more. And you know, those are the sort of the kind of like that's the school for me are those cartoonists I listed, and they're the ones where I'm able to recognize it more than in some other stuff. Or I don't know. I think sometimes for me, when I'm looking at my own work and kind of the ultimate direction I'm really trying to head in, it's one that I like examples or models that I have in my mind are like the work of the Hernandez brothers, and Gilbert Hernandez in particular is one of my all-time favorites. I really like David Boring's one of my favorite comics. I mean, the subtext that those guys create is it's so whole and intact that
And a reminder for folks is you don't start out, like, he doesn't start out making David Boring.
Oh, right.
He starts out making The Ugly Family.
Right.
And then, you know, makes this stuff and, you know, like they're talking about in the Psycho Comics that was discussed recently on the Comics thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes time to kind of formulate and get in to dissecting your own work and to kind of pulling it out and really realizing what an overarching story is.
Right, yeah. I guess for me, I'm naming a lot of other cartoonists and their work, and for me, it's kind of difficult to dissect my own stuff, so I reserve that for other cartoonists. But I do go back, and I will see. It'll be pretty clear to me, you know, a month or a year later, I'll see something like, oh, okay, yeah, all right.
You know, it's funny, though, that's something I don't think to ask about. Because, I mean, in movies, people ask directors, you know, do you watch your movies, yada, yada, or, like, actors. And it's like, I don't really ask cartoonists if they read their comics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd
be curious.
Yeah, I would be, too. I know some people that, you know, never do, or they rarely try to. I don't know. I have, like, a little drawer where, or not... Actually, it's a couple of drawers where I keep everything, and it's I used to do a lot of sketchbook drawing, because again, I thought that was what you're supposed to do if you're a cartoonist. You're like Robert Crumb and you have this sketchbook. And I mean, I had one as a kid too. My mom, I was always drawing, and my mom would give me sketchbooks, and I've got hundreds of these things, and I always go back and look through them sometimes if I'm trying to, a lot of times I'll look through them when I'm working on a story, when I'm doing my, kind of the writing of the story or the comic, and I'll kind of go through them, and sometimes they help, you know, they're like my own personal swipe file of my own stuff. You know, I don't have to read Heartbreak Soup again to figure out how to do a great comic. I mean, I probably should, but I get to, you know, kind of cannibalize myself, and I'm okay with that. And,
well, I think that you can't understate the importance for folks to really utilize the sketchbook process. I actually had this conversation already today over lunch. I'm sitting there with Marv Newland and Brendan Graham. We're all just sitting and chatting about sketchbook process, and both of them is so important. Like, I mean, here's one guy's an animator, one's a cartoonist, and mm-hmm. how that sketchbook plays a role. I mean, you may not use what's in there, but it's still formulating ideas, and it's a chance to capture those ideas because they're just going to be lost if they're not.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. I agree with that. I know that for me, drawing in a sketchbook is over the last 2 years has really changed. I don't I don't do it as much, and I actually don't miss it because I'll bring up our friend Tom Devlin. I had the chance to work with Tom years ago, and so I, you know, we'd talk or whatever. And it was, he's an interesting guy and a wonderful closet cartoonist. I remember he would liken a sketchbook to playing air guitar, and I thought that was I thought that was great, and I was certainly the case for me. I was certainly drawing in my sketchbook when I secretly, you know, when I really wanted to be doing comics, and so I've heard this story from a lot of different cartoonists and other artists as well, where there's a period of time where, you know, they're always producing work, but you don't know it because they don't finish it. And I had a really, really hard time finishing anything. I had like many years where I have stacks of comics pages that I just couldn't finish for whatever reason. Some of them I'm finishing now. I did in the new issue, or Pines number 2. There's a, you know, a 2-page story that took me more than 2 years to finish. I just let it sit there. I mean, a lot of it was, you know, and that's kind of what it took. I mean, there's another, you know, I just did a 12-page comic in like a week and a half. So it's just like whatever it takes to get it done. But I know that I had a period of time where I was doing a lot of drawing in the sketchbook. You know, it was like I was trying to wait to get good or something. I don't know. But actually Dead Ringer marked for me. But just before I made Dead Ringer, I was like, God, I'm sick of this, you know, just drawing in the sketchbook and starting comics and getting distracted and, you know, having, you know, after a couple of years, like a couple hundred pages of unfinished work. It's just, you know, disheartening. And
yeah.
And it's not why I'm doing this. So I, you know, just thought like, okay, well, my project is to, you know, try to understand what's going on and to finish things however way possible. And like, that's the project, is to finish stuff. So, and Dead Ringer was the first part of that, where I scheduled my time. I gave myself a deadline, and I worked every day on it. I mean, I try to work every day, if I can, on drawing comics. And for me, because I have a day job and I have all these other interests, like I've just started the zine distro, I don't have a lot of time to draw on a sketchbook anymore. I went on vacation. I had a nice, like, wonderful week off, and I did do a lot of drawing in my sketchbook, and it was fun, but I was, man, by the end of the week, I was, like, aching to get home and to work on my new comic for Smoke Signal and to get back to that world that I'm working on.
I'm going to do a quick song break.
Yeah.
And we're just about 35 past. We've been having a good chat. What would you like to hear?
Hamburger Lady.
Wise choice. I have to say, I'm a, you know, if you listen to the show, I'm a big Throbbing Gristle fan. And just a little shout out to Luke, the music director here at the station. He gave me this little box. That's this little weird music thing, and it has little Throbbing Gristle loops on it, and you can pitch bend it, and
wow,
including samples from Hamburger Lady. So
that's, Luke's a good guy.
He is. It's amazing. I'm very thankful. Thank you, Luke. We'll be right back. Inkstud, CITR 101.9 FM.
Her ears burned off, and her nose and her eyelashes, and her fingers are burned.
Listening to Ink Studs on CITR 101.9 FM. Just let folks know what's coming up on the show in the next couple weeks. Next week I'll be chatting with Amy Lockhart, whose new book comes out from, or is out from, Drawing Quarterly. Some fantastic drawings. She's also in the wonderful Nagadod book from my good friends at Conundrum Books. Week after that will be another Canadian, Brian Lee O'Malley. We'll be chatting about Scott Pilgrim. Strictly comics talk. No movie chat. That's a little rule of mine, I think. Unofficial, but I don't really care about the movies. Week after that will be Jason's publisher on the book we were just discussing, Zach Sally. And then upcoming interviews include Justin Green, which I'm very excited about, and Casey Green. No relation at all. Just both guys with Greens in the last name. I don't know why that are both happening in February, but it's happening. How you doing, Jason?
I'm doing good.
Good. Now, we were chatting about Dead Ringer. Now, I'm curious. What's the printing process on it?
The printing process was... Well, Zach printed it. Zach printed the whole thing.
On his archaic printing press?
Yeah, he's got an old A.B. Dick press from, I believe, the 50s. And the name of the press is Maisie, after John P's cat.
Aww.
And I've been, the Zach, the printing process, yeah, his whole thing is wanting to print all this stuff up by hand, but, it's not like using a Xerox. It's more involved, and I did a print with my friend and a very good artist named Tony Rempel. We did a print on Zach's press a couple of years ago. So I watched this thing in action, and yeah, it's pretty arcane. It's pretty old fashioned. You have to get plates made, and he's got to know how to run the thing. which I think might be the most complicated part of it. It's not. It's. I mean, yeah. It's not. It's not a Xerox machine.
It's the blacks you get are quite amazing. We're looking through with a friend today, and it's just like quite stunning.
Yeah.
So it's really nice, like, especially in a day and age where, and we're going to talk about zines, where you see a lot of zines where it's like stuff, people use laser printers, and
right. You
can tell when someone uses a laser printer.
Right.
I'm telling you, people, work on your resolution. You have no idea how much better your mini comic looks if it's not pixelated.
Either that or make it really pixelated.
Or like your stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Make it look real dirty. Like that can be fun too. But
that's an aesthetic decision.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, Zach was, the whole thing's put together by him. I think I came up with the idea for the binding out of a book that I was looking at the library. We were trying to figure out how to, I mean, I just drew the story, and Zach and I, we became friends, and we would talk on the phone every once in a while for, like, you know, 2 hours or 3 hours, just sort of, and I would just be telling him about this thing that I was working on, and he just kept, you know, he's like, you got to send me a copy, I got to live with it a little bit more before I can send it out, and... You know, every time we talked, he's like, you got to send me this, I really want to read it. And I was like, all right. And so I sent it to him, and then I got a call back not long after I sent it to him, and he's like, I want to do this. And I was like, what do you mean? It's 16 drawings. And so he told me he just really wanted to do it. We talked about it, and then it just went from there, and we decided on the... I mean, I don't know, it's a weird book. I mean, I think I think it's the best thing I've done.
I'll probably agree. Looking through your work, like it's by far the most strongest and complete work. And I'm really fascinated by, and I don't want to give too much for the story for folks to actually, because you should go out and check it out. But your camera angle, I guess for lack of a better term, is really unique in how you work the visuals all together. Because, I mean, it's... You've got metaphorical visuals, you've got literal visuals, and they all kind of work and meld. And
I'm happy to hear you say that. It's one of those things where I think all the best stuff I've done, or the thing that I don't know, best is a weird word. I think all the things I'm the most happy with, or the proudest of, they all kind of poured out of me. I am a compulsive drawer, and I feel like I'm becoming a compulsive comic maker now more than a drawer, and what that means is that not everything's going to be great, or it's not going to be, I'm not going to be happy with it, because it's just this kind of ingrained, you know, kind of graphomania or something. I just have to be doing it all the time, and so, but there's a couple of things I've done where they're all the things that I'm kind of the most happy with, I've gotten the best reaction from, I've learned the most from doing, and they all, when I think back on the process of making them, I can barely remember it. I barely remember making Dead Ringer, and this new Yoko zine I just did, I barely remember making it, and I'm really, really proud of it. Same with, I thought Wet Paint, even though it's not like really a comic, it's definitely has a cartoonist sensibility, and same with that. And my very first thing, the Airdrome, it was the same thing. I mean, I did, like, I don't know how, it's like 45 pages I did in like a month, and it just... I'm still proud of that book, even though it's pretty rough. It's not very polished, but I think it reads well. So,
have you ever read Jason McLean's stuff?
Oh yeah, I've seen his work. I was aware of it. I've been aware of it for quite a while. I used to see some of that stuff via Mark Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I like his stuff.
It just feels analogous.
Sure. I just got into, you know, Dead Ringer. Some of the stuff I remember. I mean, there is like a literal or like a real thing that propelled that story, but I didn't want to get bogged down with that. I sort of just wanted to channel it because I couldn't shake it. I couldn't shake what. I mean, I'm not trying to be a tease or anything.
No,
but it was. Anyway, I just used that energy and sort of ruminated on it and just let it kind of go, and it sort of reminds me in some ways of some of the you know, those great zines coming out of Canada. Mm-hmm. You know, the like the Naga Dog stuff, where you see them all kind of riffing, and there's all these echoes, and it's all funny and all really exciting. But and you know, it's also kind of poetic with all that stuff, how it works. I mean, like the structure of it's poetic, and that it's like there's a kind of a drawing alliteration going on. And I remember seeing kind of the potential of that being in a different context, like Dead Ringer, which I kind of, Dead Ringer for me, some really, at one time, like the work of like Binky Brown to Justin Green, and Jim Woodring's stories from Jim, the first volume, where mm-hmm. sort of these oblique autobiographical stories.
Dense.
Are really inspiring to me. And I kind of, in my own mind, I'm hesitant to say this, but I sort of feel like Dead Ringers, it's in that lineage.
Well, I mean, there's a definite linkage between the two, I know.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff, it feels so important to me that it's, I don't know if it matches it or not, or if it can keep good company with the amazing work of those guys. But it's definitely what was making me feel like, okay, it's cool that I do this. And Zach as well, Zach's work, I should say, too, yeah. was also...
And I should say, when I referenced Jason McLean, it wasn't towards that particular work. It was actually towards the wet paint and...
Oh, right. Oh, okay, good. Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Like, yeah, Robin, okay.
Making connections.
Yeah, and that's something like I've talked to Frank Santoro about is, like, it's really interesting to see this linkages and, you know, comics have their own literary tradition. I think it's really important to acknowledge that and go, here is my part in that literary tradition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I think that's okay to do. I mean, there's a kind of an arrogance to it, but I also think that's okay. It's not necessarily...
I don't think so. I don't think it's arrogant to go at all.
I mean, there's a part of me, I'd love to take another stab at it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. I know one of the shining, like one of the traditions out there, actually it's not really, I don't know if it's a tradition or not, but Justin Green's We Fellow Travelers, I think, is one of the greatest comics of all time. It's a bleak slapstick. It's just amazing. And I know for me, I would love to try to plant a flag next to that. It's, and then just that tradition is, I think, really ripe, But yeah, I guess back to the whole printing stuff. You know, I think what's interesting about Dead Ringer now to me is, I mean, even just in the short time it's been out, is that it's as far as the printing goes, is how different it looks from photocopies. Mm-hmm. At one time, I think it looked like, I think when it came out, actually, I remember I was doing a lot of photocopying, like mocking it up and sending it to Zach back and forth. And it, you know, when the final book came out, it didn't seem that different. But I mean, just within the last couple of years, with whatever's going on in Xeroxing and all that stuff, like it looks totally different now.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fascinating to me. And
now I'm going to change topic completely because we don't have a lot of time. Well, not completely. Speaking of Xeroxing.
Right.
Profanity Hill.
Right. That's segue. Yeah. Profanity Hill. It's I just started it. It's a blog and, I don't know, maybe it's lame, but I still have a hard time with the word blog and the idea of one. But it's, you know, they're good. They can be. I hope they are. I don't know. There's so much stuff I'm seeing on the internet lately I don't consider myself a Luddite, but I definitely have been scaling back my interaction. You know, it's just... Anyway.
Yeah. And you know what? I really appreciate it. I love people... When I'm working the show, folks, I have to communicate by phone. It is so much easier.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
Yeah. The phone's pretty good. You know, and writing a letter or making a zine or a comic is a great way to. It weeds out a lot of bullshit. I see all these comments people leave, and it's like, man, if they didn't have that platform, they'd have to make like a zine, and then within the first hour of making that zine, they'd realize they should spend their time better than talking shit. It's a modern day problem. But you know, that said, like a lot of DIY forums, it's what's cool about them is that they're there and you can use them and you can take matters into your own hands. And I certainly, you know, I couldn't start Profanity Hill as a storefront in Seattle. I can't afford it. I wouldn't last a month. But this way I can do it, you know, and I feel like there's a need for it. And growing up, you know, I guess my spiel is like growing up in the 90s in Seattle. I left in 97, and but when I was growing up here, it was really exciting. You know, there was a lot of stuff happening here. And
and I'm in Vancouver, so.
Right, yeah, so you're familiar. Yeah. I mean, most people are. I mean, it was really, you know, Seattle was like on the tip of the tongue. And there were a lot of zines from all over the world and coming here, as well as music, and it was really great and exciting, and people danced and at shows. And it was like, you know, it was really cool. I would cut class and go down to this place called Fallout, and I would get weird comics and zines and records. And, you know, there's another place. There's a bunch of places. You go to Tower Records, and you could get, you know, Comet Bus, or you could, you know, there were zines there. And so I moved back to Seattle, you know, several years ago, and right when I moved back, like the last kind of place like that was a place called Confounded Books, and I think it was in the first year or two of being here, he had to close, and just slowly over time, I've seen just this erosion of that kind of stuff in Seattle, and which isn't to say I think people are still making stuff, but there's just not a. And it might be that way a lot in other places as well. I don't know. I live here. And so, you know, the more I've been making my own zines and comics and I doing gallery type shows, I just got tired of hearing myself complaining about the fact that I'm in more gallery shows outside of Seattle than in Seattle. And like, I think I've done two or three, and I've done like dozens outside of Seattle.
Yeah.
And same with zines. Like I send my stuff to like places in LA and New York and Texas and Chicago and Portland, and it's like, what is going on? And so I mean I have set up some stuff here. I mean, there's been some, you know, there's a couple of people out there at a couple of bookstores that are, you know, interested in this stuff.
I think it's a Northwesterner thing.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I'm trying really hard not to like get down on my town, because what is cool though, I mean, the cool thing about there not being a lot of stuff going on, or at least my perception of that, is that there's a lot of room to do your thing, and you're not kind of...
It's not cliquey.
Right, yeah, you're just sort of, there's a lot of variety in for people that are doing stuff, but yeah, I mean, I went, last time I was in Portland, I went to that great shop, Floating World, and I saw his zine area, and it was like, holy cows, like, this is, there's so much stuff there, it was overwhelming. And just, I mean, his store is fantastic, but just the zine area alone was like, this is crazy. And so anyway, I just kind of felt, I mean, there is a wonderful, it's called Zap, it's the zine archive project. I'm going to go in there after I get off the phone with you. They have an event, and I'm going to be going there. But it's, you know, it's a library, it's an archive, it's, you know, it's a place to hang out kind of thing and do events, whereas I kind of want to provide a, you know, I really want to see what's out there in Seattle. Like, what does Seattle have to offer by way of, you know, handmade publications and zines? Because, again, I know there's stuff happening, but I can't find it. And there isn't, you know, there's not a marketplace. But so, I don't know, I'm really excited about trying to provide a, you know, like a portrait of what's going on here.
It's funny, people think of Seattle as like this mecca in a way, but I know folks that live there, and there's like, there is no...
Right.
There is a real big lack of a large scene.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, the kind of, there's a lot of things that have happened here, especially a lot of it while I was gone. So that there was the whole tech boom and bust, and there was the cultural decline of, you know, what had been happening in the 90s, and what we're left with was sort of this tech culture of all the, you know, Amazon, Adobe, Google, I don't know, all this stuff. And so, you know, a lot of the younger people that are here, it's all computers and wireless. And, I mean, there's Starbucks. I mean, they've wiped out all the diners. There's, like, three diners left. And, I, you know, I'm a guy that likes to go to a diner.
Mm-hmm.
I don't necessarily want to go to a coffee shop all the time, you know. So, you know, it's just kind of, I guess, maybe sour grapes on my part. I don't know. But, I again, I do think there's stuff happening here. There's a great zine called Ong Ong. That's ONG space ONG, and you know, there's, and that's like a zine with, it's an omnibus of all sorts of different information. There's interesting mini comics being made by Kelly Froh, Max Klott. I call Max Klott is Max Klott Fettler, or Felter. That's why I call him Max Klott. He's great. He just made a little masterpiece called Rough Grocery. And
Kelly, I really like Kelly's stuff.
Yeah, she's fantastic. I don't know why I'm not hearing people talking about her all the time. I mean, she's wonderful portrait comics. She just did this one about her aunt that's fantastic, Debbie's story. And so I just sort of decided, like, I'm tired of hearing myself complaining about Seattle. It's like, you know, there's like, you know, I can't, there's no zines or blah, you know, nobody wants to have a complainer in their midst. So I just decided, like, okay, well, I'm going to do this and see what happens. So it is an experiment. It's not, you know, it's not like my aesthetic thing necessarily. I'm not, like, the criteria for what is on Profanity Hill, I mean, the ruling point is that it's the Seattle area.
Yeah.
It's not like, it's not my thing. I'm not, you know, I'm not necessarily in the
You're not going to post King Cat on there.
No, I can't. No. And, you know, it's funny. A couple of people had mentioned to me, you know, I asked a bunch of, I sent out a call for, like, telling people what the deal was, which is that I'll buy your zine outright for a wholesale price, and I'll put it up on this thing, and I also invite everybody to blog, so they can put whatever they want, as long as it's, you know, whatever related on the Profanity Hill blog. And and you know, a lot of people wrote back saying, well, would you sell my stuff to local stores? And I said, well, no. you need to do that, like,
yeah.
That's, I mean, if I'm in Portland, if I'm making a trip or going somewhere, you know, I'll take stuff with me. Like, I'm fine with, like, you know, bringing it to other places, because I like the idea of a kind of gateway. But
Jason,
yeah,
our time is up.
All right.
I'm sorry, I just realized it's 3 o'clock.
Okay, no, yeah, no worries.
But just let people know, profanityhill.blogspot.com.
Yep.
Well worth checking out. There is a selection of stuff. Your stuff, Kelly Froh, Max Klott Felter? I'm sorry. Eric Reynolds, Adam Guarino. Anyone else I'm forgetting?
There's, you know, I'm supposed to be getting stuff from Stefan Gruber.
Any Lasky coming up?
I hope. I'm hoping to see Dave tonight. I'm going to harass him.
He's a treasure.
Yep. And Lucy Morehouse, who does Ong Ong, will be having Ong Ong 6 when it's done, probably later this spring or summer. And Tony Rempel is coming up. A bunch of stuff. So.
Excellent.
Yep.
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today, Jason.
Yeah,
it was
you.
A great conversation.
It's all right.
Anything you want? What do you want me to end with?
Oh, end with the boredoms.
Okay. Sounds good to me. Thanks so much, Jason.
All right.
All right. Bye.
See you.
Unfortunately, we ran a little late there. Up next is Japanese Music Waste. It's kind of perfect that we're playing the boredoms right before that. CATR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. It's 3 o'clock.